Well, welcome everyone. I know there's a number of people on the call, and Farouk, thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to go ahead and mute out, and if there's time at the very end, I'll open up the lines and let other people ask some questions as well. So for those of you who don't know Dr. Master, he really doesn't need any introduction, but I'll just give you a very quick introduction. Farouk is the author now of Farouk, how many books have you written? I've lost track, actually.
54 to be exact.
54 books. And he's also, on top of being an incredible author in all areas of homeopathy, from materia medica to philosophy to case-taking to therapeutics to every aspect of homeopathic methodology, he is an excellent, excellent educator of homeopathy and one of the most knowledgeable practitioners that I've ever met. And I've traveled all over the world, and I can say really there are very few people that I come across who have the mastery of homeopathy and the ability to communicate it clearly and in such a way that people can leave a conference or a seminar able to put into practice what they've learned from Farouk. So this is a really great opportunity for all of us to learn from such a master. And Farouk, welcome so much again for joining us.
Thank you, Kim.
Farouk, I know the title of today's interview is called Classical Hahnemannian Homeopathy, and I'm just curious, there's a lot of people who talk about the different materia medicas. Could you give us a little bit of a background of Hahnemann's original Materia Medica Pura? What is the conception of that book, and why is it written in the way that it's written?
Okay, for sure. As everybody knows, that 1796 saw the birth of homeopathy, and later on, after the inventing the principle and the law of similars, Hahnemann was purely practicing homeopathy according to the medications that he knew at that time when he was a medical doctor. Only thing difference was that he started using the dose in a very little form, but the medicines were still the same. If he was using arsenic in modern medicine, he was still using arsenic in his prescription into homeopathy. Later on, when he discovered that he has to prove the remedy on a healthy human being and to note down its effect on the healthy human being and then apply those symptoms on the sick individual, he brought out the first book, what we all know as Hahnemann's Fragmenta de Viribus Medica Mentorum Positivis, if you remember. And in that book, he writes practically the toxicological effect of some remedies, not all the remedies. I think so it was 27 remedies to be exact, the English translation being done by Richard Hale. And in this book, he only mentions the toxicological effect of the drugs, but not much about the brewing part of it. And then later on, he writes two books. One is what is known as the Materia Medica Pura, and the second is Chronic Disease. It is in these two books that he mentions the effect, the pure effect of observation of the remedy that were given to the to his friends, to his students, he himself, to his family members, to his children, and to some of his patients. And he observed the pure effect of this the drug substance, and he noted down very carefully, and this is how the evolution of Materia Medica Pura and chronic disease took place.
So, Farouk, what is the primary difference between chronic diseases and Materia Medica Pura? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, sure. See, what happens is basically Hahnemann started writing these two books at a very different period. The first book that he started writing was the Materia Medica Pura. The chronic disease came almost in the year 1832, to be exact, you know. So the Pura was the first to be written, and then in Pura, what exactly happens is that he brings out the Pura into totally 6 volumes, and the first volume that appears was in the year 1811. And then subsequently, every few years, he keeps on, you know, bringing out each volume of Materia Medica Pura. Now, in Materia Medica Pura, what is most important is that he is giving the Materia Medica of the anti-psoric remedies. This is very important, that Hahnemann labels these remedies as what is known as the anti-psoric remedies. While in chronic disease, this is not so. He repeats some of the medicines from the Pura into the chronic disease, but he never calls all the medicines mentioned in the chronic diseases as an anti-psoric remedies, because here he is also giving you some of the anti-psychotic remedies and some of the anti-syphilitic remedies. So I think so. This is the only difference that I could find out between these two books. Otherwise, practically, the Materia Medica part of which is almost the same, except there are some remedies which are, as I said earlier, are overlapping.
Look, why are there so many additions? Because there's, you know, it can be very confusing with how many additions there are.
Additions in the sense, Kim?
Yeah, why are there so many editions of the above books? There's so many of them.
See, Hahnemann, he randomly started brewing the remedies, as you know that. And as he kept on brewing the remedies, he kept on adding it in Materia Medica Pura. And then later on, as you know that he was for 12 to 13 years doing a research that why in acute disease homeopathy seems to be quite successful and why in chronic disease...
Sure.
Homeopathy is not showing so good results. And this was the breaking point when he forms his theory of chronic disease. And here, he now is introducing those remedies, especially from his knowledge of botanical kingdom and mineral kingdom, that there are some very deep-acting remedies which can root out those psoric miasms and psychotic miasm and syphilitic miasm. And he specially introduces them in chronic disease. This is how... he plans to write the subsequent volume in chronic disease. I think so. Volume 1 comes in 28, and then 3rd and 4th volume comes in 1930. And I think so by 1939, the 3rd edition of chronic disease comes, which is
right.
About 556 pages.
Right. You know, Farouk, for a lot of people, they feel that these are very difficult books to read, that they're very dry. How would you suggest that somebody study these types of Materia Medicos?
Okay. I will tell you. Now, as you know that, to be very honest, I also never started learning homeopathy referring these two books. Even though I knew that they were existing, but somehow I was never too much motivated to read these books. The charm of reading these books only comes when you have a particular case in your hand and you are trying to find out the symptoms of the remedy. And when you are trying to find out the symptom of the remedy, you may not get that particular rubric in a repertory form or in a software, especially when you open a repertory. But when you try to open the Encyclopedia Homeopathica and from there you try to search exactly the description of the patient's symptoms, many times I could see that very clearly coming in the remedy. I'll give you an example. The most important example will be of a sepia. Sepia is one such remedy which... the first remedy which helped me to understand this aspect. Now, if you open sepia in chronic disease, Hahnemann, I think so, describes this remedy in chronic disease and not in Pura, if I'm not mistaken. I had a lady who had a problem with lots and lots of, infection in the stomach, Helicobacter pylori infection, if you remember, producing a lot of acidity, you know. And this particular lady had a very peculiar symptom that there used to be a stomachache, especially after dinner, perspiration after eating, and pressure in the stomach while eating, and pressure in the stomach after a meal, and that makes the whole meal difficult to digest. These were the very characteristic symptoms. Once I started reading this remedy in chronic disease, I was astonished that I could find exactly those same symptoms. While the description of that, you know, that the combination of this symptom is impossible to get when you open directly the repertory. After this, my interest grew. And then I, after a period of, you know, studying for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, many, many years, I could find out a method that this book becomes such an interesting books, this both books put together, that I started writing my Materia Medica notes based purely on these two books, especially to learn the remedies from Hahnemann.
Very interesting. Farouk, yeah. are there other books that you study in this way? I mean, I think it'd be useful for people to be aware of what you particularly use for your own study of Materia Medica.
Yeah, I will tell you. See, what I do normally, I will rather continue my example on sepia.
Okay.
Suppose if I have to study and I have to teach sepia in the classroom, my first thing is that I will collect 10 good cured cases of sepia in my practice, which has been beautifully cured, where the pathology has been, you know, improved a lot, and I have observed the patient for a reasonably period of 2 to 3 years, and most of the symptoms have disappeared. I take those symptoms as a very solid symptoms of the Materia Medica and keep it on one side of my paper. On my other side of the paper, what I try to do is to, if Hahnemann has proved this remedy, then I will always rather read from Hahnemann. And the first thing is that I will like to read is what Hahnemann, you know, what method he uses to prepare this medicine and what was the historical background of introducing this remedy. You all know the example of sepia, that how it was introduced in homeopathy.
It's an interesting story, Farouk. Why don't you just quickly share it so people who are maybe not aware of it.
Okay. The story goes like this, that there used to be a very famous painter who had a colic in the abdomen, and he had a very, he had a habit of moistening the paintbrush with his saliva in the mouth, you know, and that gave the hint to the Hahnemann that maybe he is moistening his saliva, so definitely he is putting the color or the ink in his mouth repeatedly, and that ink happened to be the ink which was made from sepia, and that's how the idea came to Hahnemann, and that's how this remedy was introduced. And then Hahnemann said that, okay, we are going to potentize the ink of this sepia, and he called this remedy as sepia succus. That is the name he officially uses in this remedy. So the historical background, why he uses this part, of course. And then what I do is I read the Materia Medica from first to the last line, and I see which words keeps on repeating all the time. So what are the common words that keeps on repeating in that particular remedy? I try to, you know, make a small summary out of that. Then I take that word and I put it in the radar, and I put it in the search facilities of extended search, and see from that word what rubrics were formed in the repertory form. Do you get it? And then I take the repertorial rubric. I take the common word which has come. After doing Hahnemann, studying from Hahnemann, I next jump on to Herring. Again, I do the same exercise, but here in Herring, I have one advantage. Hahnemann does not give clinical symptoms in his Materia Medica Pura, neither in his chronic disease. But Herring gives the clinical symptoms. So if Herring has given the name metrorrhagia, or Herring has used the word fibroid, then again I will take the word fibroid, put it into the extended search of the radar software program, get the rubric extracted, and again try to understand. So I pick up the word from Herring in this way to get the clinical symptom. Then I go to Ellen's, and then finally to Lippi and Dunham's. So these are the five authors that usually screen: two Hennemans, one Herring, one Allen, and the fifth is my own case records. And that's how I try to pick out the general symptoms of the remedy. Once I know the general symptoms of the remedy, I try to find out from chronic disease where exactly is the pathology. Is it in the liver, brain, heart, lung, mind, skin? So which are the organs that are targeted? So I know that also, that these are the organs and the combination of organs. This is also very important, that with sepia, we know that the uterus and pelvis is affected, but we also know that the circulation is also affected. So circulation with pelvis is sepia for me. So that's how also I try to make some permutations and combinations within the remedy. Once I do that, I study the modalities. So that is also extremely important to know the peculiar modalities, especially related to the time, weather, or the general modalities, not so much into the particular modalities. And this is how I try to build up the picture. Now, many people may not know that if you read the Pruings of Hahnemann, which is the original Pruing of sepia, you will hardly find any fears. But later on, new and new authors came, they added a lot of fears into the sepia. But actually, if you see, it is more of anxiety picture and less of fear in the sepia pathology. So this is very important. And then what happens over here, there are certain peculiar words. Like there is one word known as piano kim in the Pruing of Hahnemann. Now this word, one word piano, really helped me to extend the knowledge of sepia to such an extent that today I ask always my patient that how good you are at your fingers. Do you do knitting, cross stitch, stitching and all those things? Because this is also the work of the fingers, you know. And that's how I now know today that sepia is a very important remedy for creativity. And I have seen so many cases in my practice where I have given sepia on creativity and patients have improved. So I take certain words, certain peculiar words in the Hahnemann's description and then try to see the broader meaning of those words and put it into my practice. So this is important. And then, of course, the grinding of teeth in sepia in the sleep, you know, which was mentioned in the Pruing, but I have seen 70% of my sepia patients, they grind their teeth. The general time modality between 3 p.m. and 5 p.m. aggravation. Sepia is not at all a morning person, gets a lot of energy later on. So all those generals I have repeatedly confirmed in my practice and then build a larger picture on what Hahnemann has mentioned. And this is how I build up my Materia Medica.
Very interesting. Farouk, I know you're aware of Herring's Materia Medica approach to call the diagnostic method. So I'm just curious, there's some similarities already to what you've described, but I'm just curious, to what degree do you use Herring's diagnostic method, and could you want to comment a little bit about his approach?
Of course, why not? Herring was teaching in this Philadelphia Homeopathic Medical College, Homeopathic Medical College, and he said that every remedy that you want to study, you should do it in three readings. The first reading is the attention should be directed chiefly to the organs in which the symptoms occur. This is very important, he said to his students. And in this, you know, he is giving a lot of examples about how a particular remedy has got a particular action on certain organs of the body. And here he is giving you an example of a belladonna. Well, this is an article which Herring wrote in a journal about Herring's diagnostic method. So in that article, he says this: in the first reading, you try to just see the organ. So you have a collective impression of the whole remedy, that what remedy, you know, can do in the human body. Then the second reading, the attention should be directed to the character of the symptom. So this is very important. And character of the symptom, more characteristically, he's talking about the pains. He's talking about all the sensations. And he's also talking about different sensation in different part of the remedy. And he's also talking about that the similar sensations are similar to which other remedies. So the remedy, when what you are studying, may be a belladonna. But if belladonna has a, you know, a throbbing kind of pain, then which other remedies, you know, will have a throbbing kind of pain. Not necessarily that it should be from the same kingdom, you know, but it could be from any other kingdom, but it should be the throbbing pain. So this he wants you to compare with other remedies. So this is very, very important. So it could be a remedy like creosote, you know, which may have a throbbing pain, but we all know that creosote is not related to any botanical kingdom. Or it could be lachesis, which is not related to botanical kingdom. But he says because of the same sensation and the same type of pain, it is related. So here in the second reading, he says that please look for the sensation, the type of pain, and you should compare their similar pain with any other remedy. He gives a very nice example in that article. He is talking about burning pain of arsenic, and then he says that a burning pain of arsenic occurs frequently within the blood vessels, whereas the burning pain of carbovege occurs more externally on the skin. See, such a fine observation. Both the remedies have got burning, but Herring says that in carbovege it is more on the skin, and in the arsenic it is more in the blood vessels. So this is the type he is talking in the second reading. In the third reading, he says that the condition under which the symptom take place should be noted. Now, here he is talking about the aggravations. So he says that aggravations are more important to study than the amelioration of the remedy. So he says that you should at least know the general aggravation of the remedy. And he says in the fourth reading, the remedy, you know, with a particular attention to be paid with the combination of symptoms. Now, this is very important to understand what Herring means by combination of symptoms. Now, here, let's take an example of lycopodium. A person may have sugar in the urine. At the same time, he may have renal stones. And then he may have craving for sweets. Now, if you see this type of combination, chiefly occurs in remedies like, you know, sulfur or lycopodium. So such type of combination, but this combination symptom has to be very peculiar and need not be very, very ordinary. So it could be a crack in the lower lip, herpetic eruption at the corner of the mouth, and person should have a strong craving for bread. Now this goes in favor of natrum muriaticum. So such combination of symptom Herring is trying to ask us to, you know, understand the fourth reading. And this is the method which I have applied, and I find it quite successful, because then you know the modalities, you know the sensation, you know the type of pain, and you know the organ affinity. I think so. What more you know, because you cannot learn all the symptoms of the remedy and memorize, and I never try to memorize any symptom.
Baroque, in terms of studying remedies according to botanical groupings or kingdoms, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, is this something
new,
or
this is very, very dangerous, Kim.
But what do you, in terms of your own approach? Because I know you write, you know, you've written books on snake remedies, and you've written a book on milk remedies. So you have discussed groups. So
yes,
where do you feel this is useful?
I will tell you two parts of it: the positive and the negative part.
Okay.
The most important thing is that, as you know, that over a period of years, I have always proved remedies belonging to the snake group.
Yeah.
There is two reasons. Number one is that I would rather like to prove a venomous substance which has got a marked affinity on the human pathophysiology, so that you can get a group of symptoms very fast. So this is my one aim. And second aim is to always work in one direction, you know, so that you can go deeper and deeper and deeper and get the best and then understand the whole group. So in that way, it is extremely good to study a materia medica when you study all the snakes together, when you study all the spiders together. Yes. But you cannot generalize the whole definition, you know, and ultimately come to a conclusion that, the person looks like a dolphin and I would like to prescribe a dolphin, or the person fish looks like a fish and I would like to prescribe a fish. That type of classification is quite dangerous, according to me.
Yeah.
So this is not acceptable. Or you say that, okay, there is a jealousy in the whole case and jealousy indicates an animal kingdom. Well, this is not acceptable for me, because You all know that there are many other jealous remedies which are non-animal also. And this thing I frequently read in homeopathic links, the cases that they describe, you know. And you frequently look. Let me give you an example, you know. I won't name the author, I won't name anything, but I will tell you what the famous author says. At the end of the case, when he's trying to give you the reason for the reason for the prescription, this is what he says. First of all, the whole case looks like an animal remedy case. Dash, a strong personality, very vivid and attention-seeking behavior, and an attractive behavior. Secondly, she looks like a Cetacean, into bracket, a member of a whale family. Now, this is bad. You cannot do this, you know.
Yeah.
You cannot do this, yeah. So this is my own main objection. And then many other cases, you know, many other cases where they prove a remedy on certain themes, you know. Like, I know there was a case in homeopathic links, again, described a very famous teacher. And now what happens, her husband happens to be a past life regression, you know, he works with those patients. And so in the past life regression, the husband says that he was in a concentration camp in Germany. So now she prescribes a remedy, hydrocyanic acid, and she makes a theme of that remedy that people, you know, who are in the concentration camp and the type of feeling that they have in that particular atmosphere is the main feeling of hydrocyanic acid. Now,
yeah, you know, Farouk, it seems unfortunate to me because, you know, I think it's certainly worthy to investigate the value of thematic ideas running through groups of remedies. But, you know, what you're describing, obviously, is so loose. And I think it's really problematic because it really opens us up to criticism from the scientific community. You know, when people are describing the remedies in this way and are not applying a rigorous approach, I mean, I see it as really a big problem. But let me just ask you, though, in general, though, you are able to find some themes to some of the groupings, and do you find this helpful in your practice of the remedies of prescribing?
Yeah, see, now here, let me tell you, let me give you an example of the same remedy, sepia, okay?
Yeah.
Now, see, if I'm treating a case with a sepia, I know very well that when my patient is going to fall sick, who is under influence of sepia and has a common cold, the next remedy which is going to be very helpful is mercury. And if you ask me why I come to mercury, because I use concordance chapter of Bonnie-Gushan's repertory, and Bonnie-Gushan's very nicely gives you the list of remedies that follows the respiratory system as a complementary to sepia. And in the program Radar, we have a, you know, the Bonnie-Gushan's repertory, the families of repertory, where you can go to concordance and take that thing as a rubric itself if you're not very sure and if you want to repertorize. This type of grouping I do a lot in remedy relationship and also in understanding of the remedy. So if I'm studying sepia and I know very well that, you know, that sepia has got a very good migraine, then I know that there is also another remedy which belongs to the fish kingdom, which also has a migraine and which has a migraine similar to sepia. So I know that there is a remedy which comes from the scallop, you know, the scallop which comes from the Massachusetts. And there is a brewing of this remedy, scallops. And if you study the symptoms of migraine, it is exactly resembling sepia. So this is very important for me. And then if I have to study the migraine of sepia and I have to compare it with the migraine of phosphorus, yes, it is still similar because both the remedies have got headache worse from fasting. So again, the same, you know, modality which links the migraine, both left-sidedness. So again, the same modality which links to them. So this is how this grouping helps me. But if you ask me that whether I'm using a kingdom approach in my practice, that looking at the case, I can decide that this is this kingdom, this, no. That kind of homeopathy, I am at least far away.
I see. Okay. What about, Farouk, what about doctrine of signatures? Are you using that at all in your practice on any level?
No, Kim. not at all, not at all. Because there is so much written within the Organon. If you read paragraph 108 and paragraph 144, and also in Materia Medica Pura, Hahnemann is very, very clearly mentions the disaster or the dangers of using a remedy in your practice with a knowledge of a doctrine of signature. Not just the physical knowledge, you know, about how it looks like and what is the color of a substance, but also its quality. And repeatedly he is mentioning about that you have to know the knowledge after administering the remedy on a healthy individual. Mm-hmm. So this he keeps on stressing repeatedly in his Organon and Pura. And hence, I have never shown much interest. But people who have shown interest exactly in the opposite way and have created a Materia Medica based on that phenomena, when I read their articles in the magazines, I am shocked because they themselves contradict their own views. They contradict their own views. If you look at the group symptom of mammal remedies, you know, described by Nancy Herrick in one of her book, and she very nicely describes how the patient, you know, looks like if a person requires a mammal remedy because he has got problems with nourishment, protection, you know, and she says breast is soft and warm and yielding in nourishment, so it's a mother. And then ultimately she says that the mammal remedies have got a lot of issues with the mother. Okay? But then when she describes lac-lupinum, the wolf remedy, there is nothing like that in the whole remedy. In fact, the whole theme she herself describes is that and that is all around us. So this has nothing to do with mother. And then when I have used so many lac remedies in my practice, I have not seen issues with the mother at all in any of my cases.
Interesting.
So see how it, you know, contradicts one's own opinion, you know.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So, Farouk, I'd like to move on, and I know that you're going to be speaking at this next year's NCH conference. For those of you who don't know already, the National Center of Homeopathy is going to be having a star-studded conference with speakers from all over the world, including Dr. Farouk Master, Massimo Mangiovori, Alistair Gray, Will Taylor, Dr. Joe Kellerstein, Annette Snivellet, Jeremy Scher, George Vitolkis, just a star-studded line of top-level homeopathy speakers. And the conference is going to happen on April 8th through the 10th, and there is a very special early bird special, so you might want to contact the National Center for Homeopathy and find out about the super early bird special for the April 8th through 10th conference. Dr. Farouk Master is specifically going to be speaking on homeopathic treatment of skin disorders. And so I thought I would just take a few moments before opening up the lines and letting some other people ask some questions just to touch base on that topic particularly. So, Farouk, can I ask you a few questions about skin problems?
Please, do ask.
Yeah. So, you know, in the different editions of the Organon, whether you're looking at the fourth, fifth, or sixth editions, as it relates to posology, you know, potency and dose, Hahnemann describes things a little bit differently. And, you know, in the sixth edition, in the Q potency approach, he describes having a skin eruption at the end of the cure, at the end of treatment. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What is your experience? And have you seen this in your own practice?
First of all, I don't. There are many things which Hahnemann says in the Organon as far as this aspect of skin disease is concerned. There are two things which he is talking about. Number one, what he is talking about is that as till the time there is a skin disease on at the level of the skin, no internal disease can ever develop within your body. This is what he is talking when he is describing a sora. When there is a vesicle on the body, no internal sora can take place. Number two, he's talking the same thing when he's talking about the psychotic miasm, that till the time there is a figwort on the genital, no internal disease can ever develop. Or he's also talking about the ulcer on the penis, that is a syphilitic miasm, that till the time there is an ulcer, no internal syphilis can ever take place. Now, this observation of Hahnemann, I do not agree, because I have seen cases where there is an eruption of the body on the at the level of the skin, but you will see a fully developed internal disease. So this is quite contrary to what Hahnemann says and what I have seen in my practice. Number two, that figwort disease, what he is talking about, and he says that if it is remains on the genital, no internal disease will ever develop. This also I have seen quite contrary, that no. And I have seen many times that this syphilitic ulcer is a self-limiting ulcer. It disappears in 7 to 10 days, whether you take the treatment or you don't take the treatment. But at the same time, you don't see an internal disease coming after the lesion has disappeared. So this is very, very important that Hahnemann is forcing us to believe this statement. But rather what I am thinking is, and my understanding is, that during the time of Hahnemann, people used to apply lots of arsenic, lead, and zinc ointments on scabies, figwort disease, and syphilis. And maybe the effect of applying those ointments and having the side effect of those metals entering within the body and then producing a new disease is a better way to understand, rather than to understand that this disease has gone inside and now it will produce an internal disease. So this is one aspect which I am going to talk and in much more detail in the skin conference. Mm-hmm. And the second part is that at the end of a cure in a chronic disease, the skin eruption has to come out. Well, I have not seen, I have cured people, but I have not seen the disease coming out. Hahnemann does not mention whether it is the same scabies which has disappeared is now coming back again, because scabies is a disease which usually comes once in lifetime. It never keeps on coming every month or every 6 months or every year. So we are not very sure whether Hahnemann is talking about the same scabies coming back or the same sora coming back. And in most of my patients, I don't even see the skin eruption coming at the end of the cure, and the patient gets better quite on its own. So I think so the more focused that I will be dealing with the skin disease cases that I will bring in the conference will be more related to the susceptibility of an individual, where I'm going to stress that everything what Hahnemann says is not to be thrown off, but what we have to take from what Hahnemann says in the Organon and chronic disease is that a person with a very strong susceptibility will surely have a lesser amount of disease, and a person with a very weak susceptibility will have a very heavy cover of the disease, and that has to be removed with a proper constitutional prescribing.
Farouk, in terms of Hahnemann's conception of the miasms, do you use his miasmatic thinking at all in terms of your prescribing for chronic disease?
Yes, a lot. A lot, but not how the Hahnemann wants us to understand, because when I study Hahnemann, he has made lot of errors as far as miasms are concerned. He talks in the initial stage that the miasms are quite invisible and caused by, it's a quite dynamic and non-material and spirit-like force. But in his subsequent writing, in his chronic disease, in his pura, in his multiple articles on hydrophobia and genius of the homeopathic healing art, he is talking about a virus. He is talking that the disease is caused by an infection, and it is caused by a virus which moves very rapidly, you know. So he is contradicting himself. So in that way, I am not putting lot of faith into what Hahnemann wants us to understand. Secondly, he is confusing scabies with sora a lot. Number three, he is confusing us in psychotic miasm when he talks about the pus from the urethra like a gonorrhea. But in gonorrhea, people don't suffer from warts, in medically speaking. So basically, he is confusing figwort disease, what we call as a human papilloma virus disease, with gonorrhea. So this is another big mistake. And the third mistake, he is talking in the syphilis, where actually he is describing the painful glands but syphilitic glands are never painful. They are the most painless glands. So here again, Hahnemann is confusing with chancroid, you know. So there are various areas where he is making mistake, and hence I don't put lot of my faith into that aspect of the way Hahnemann explains the miasm. But I definitely put more faith in his theory that in psora the disease is quite functional, in psychotic it becomes less functional, and in the syphilitic stage it is more for destructive pathology. So yes, Kim, I agree in that. And one more thing, people who came after Hahnemann, like Herring, like Dunham, like Lippi, they hardly wrote anything in the literature regarding this chronic disease and miasms of homeopathy. So I strongly feel that even they have felt, you know, something. Otherwise, why there is not a single article by Hahnemann, by Herring, or by Lippi, or by Dunham in relation to the chronic disease and miasm? I always wondered.
I know, it's amazing. Farouk, how would you describe the anti-psoric medicines? And specifically, what do they have to do with psora?
Yeah. Now, this is also a very important thing, that Hahnemann, when he wrote chronic diseases, he says that all the medicines that I am going to describe in this book are antipsoric. Now, here the word antipsoric does not mean it has to do something with psora, honestly speaking. Here what Hahnemann meant was that antipsoric remedies are the deep-acting remedies capable of removing any chronic disease. This is what actually he meant, but he never said. And he used the label antipsoric remedies. This is quite confusing to the beginner or the newcomer who will get confused, because he will see a remedy under the psora, what he calls a the antipsoric remedy, and then he will see that the same medicines are mentioned also under syphilis. So then, the confusion starts that why this is happening. And same thing if you even open the repertory under, let's say, psora, and you will see nitric acid, 2 marks, mercury, 2 marks. But we all know from our knowledge that these are also the syphilitic remedies. So I think so there is a mark... There's a major mistake in describing the definition of antipsoric remedy. According to me, antipsoric remedy can be a remedy which does not necessarily belong to a psoric remedy. It can belong to psychotic or syphilitic. But what he wants to understand, it's a deep acting and can remove a disease permanently, which is chronic in nature.
Very interesting. So, Farouk, I know you're going to be one of a number of speakers at this year's National Center of Homeopathy Conference on April 8th through the 10th. And again, yes, there is a super early bird special for that if you want to contact the National Center and find out more about it. Farouk, could you just give us an idea of what you're planning to present at next year's conference, what you're hoping to focus
yes
on? And also... anything else that you're doing, any other teaching engagements or anything that you want to let people know about, any books that are coming out or anything, please let us know.
Okay. Number one, what I'm going to speak, I would like to tell you that first I'll be speaking on psora, psychotic and syphilis, and I'm going to show the mistakes within the organon and the chronic disease. And I'm going to also show that what is really good for us to understand from this three important miasm as far as the skin disease is concerned, number one. Number two, I am going to show you the cases where we see an eruption at the end of the cure, and I am going to show you the cases of the same quality where you never find the eruptions at the end of the cure, and yet a person improves at all the levels for a very long period of life. So this is what I am going to show you. And of course, third thing that I'm going to show you is the materia medica of small skin remedies. So this is what I'll present in the Congress. And right now, basically, I am working on how to identify a psoric patient, a psychotic patient, and a syphilitic patient based on the symptom of latent psora, latent psychosis, and latent syphilis in your practice. So this is what I'm working on, and maybe I'll incorporate that work later on in Radar Opus or Encyclopedia Homeopathica.
Great. Farouk, are any conferences that are coming up for you or anything that you're doing that you want to let people know about? Or?
Yeah, I'll be in Germany in Badenweiler.
Okay.
And in Badenweiler, I'll be presenting the pediatric case-taking, how to take a case of in pediatrics, especially of a newborn child, what are the methods, what are the tools, and how to understand the language of the child and how to transform that language into the language of the repertory. So this is what I'll be speaking in February in Badenweiler, Germany.
Fantastic. Anything else you want to let anybody know about? Or?
Just I want to wish all my listeners a Merry Christmas, Happy Thanksgiving Day, and Happy New Year.
Thank you, Farouk. I'm going to open it up and let some other people ask some questions, okay? Hold on one second.
Sure.
Any questions for Dr. Farouk Master?
Yeah, I had a question.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I have your book on Bach flower remedy. I was wondering how you determine if you use a Bach flower remedy or a homeopathic remedy.
Oh, I hardly use flower remedies, even though I have written a book on flower remedies, but I hardly use in the last 10 or 15 years, I have hardly stopped using Bach flower remedies. Initially in my practice, I used to use rescue remedy a lot and maybe some remedies like impatient and vervain. But last 15 years, I have stopped using Bach flower remedy.
And why have you stopped, Farouk? Is there a reason that you...
The depth. The patient's improvement doesn't stay for a very long time. And very soon, you'll require a deep acting remedy.
I see. Great. Thank you. Other questions for Dr. Farouk Master? Go ahead. You're live, so if you got a question, here's your opportunity.
Tim, I have one.
Go ahead.
I would like for him to comment on his book on the lax.
Yeah. What about the comment about the book on the lax?
I would just like to hear his comments and why he chose to really center a whole book just on the lax remedy.
Okay. Oh, did you hear the question?
Yeah, I understood. See, what happened was it was an accident. I never intended to publish that book. In fact, I was teaching lax remedies a lot in Holland, and my friend René Otter wanted to do the transcription of my seminar into a book form. And I said, okay, go ahead. If you've got enough material to be presented in the form of a book, I don't mind. And that's how the thing happened, actually. But I had no honest intention to publish a book on lax remedy. These are all the transcription of various seminars that I had taken in Holland.
Okay. It's a very good book, Farouk. I think it's the information is very, very useful. It's well presented. Other questions for Dr. Farouk Master?
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead.
There's a whole movement out there on trituration provings.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if he had any comments on that.
You're talking about the before X trituration?
Well, from
the
beginning to the end.
I skipped reading those articles, Kim. To be honest, I skipped them.
Yeah.
It appears on many times, but I skip it. I don't want to read it.
Yeah. Okay. So there you got your answer. Somebody else had a question, too?
I've got a question.
Go ahead.
Hi, Kim. Farouk, do you have any comments on fungal skin diseases like a tinea or a...
Of course. What do you want to know?
I guess directions to be, you know, being fungal, being maybe systemic, just kind of directions that you would take,
Okay. Number one is that fungal infections are most difficult to treat, especially the fungus on the nails. You know, it will take years for you to treat them. It's not very easy that you give a few prescriptions and the nail will be all right. But otherwise, the fungal infections are quite easy to treat, especially if it's an athlete's foot or tinea versicolor. These are the two common fungal infections which I see in my day-to-day practice. Now, I don't know, but I use constitutional medicines, but there are two intercurrent remedies which has helped me a lot over a period of years. The first is torula. Torula is one remedy, you know, which is prepared from the East. I hope you know this. And the East plant is potentize, and it was introduced by Dr. Ingling. And this is the intercurrent remedy that I use in chronic fungal patients. And the second remedy that I use is chrysorbinum, or what is known as Goa powder. This is also another, this remedy I use as an intercurrent. When I say intercurrent means I take a 30 potency in a centesimal scale and just interpose one dose, you know, and then continue my constitutional medicine. And it really speeds up, you know, the whole process. So when torula proving is in great detail, anyone who is interested.
Oh, that work, everyone, Farouk, spell the remedy name.
T-O-R-U-L-A, Torula Cerevisiae, C-E-R-E-V-I-S-I-A-E.
Okay, great. And then the other remedy is spelled C-H...
Chrysorbinum, yeah.
C-H-R-Y-S-O-P-H-A-N-I-C, right? Chrysophenic acid?
Chrysophenic acid or chrysorbinum, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's a very nice remedy as an intercurrent. Comes from leguminaceae family, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. I think we have time for maybe one more question. Go ahead. We have still time for a question or two.
Hi, Kim.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, Kim, I just want to wish to Dr. Farouk Master Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes.
Farouk, did you
Dr. Farouk Master, Happy New Year.
Oh, same to you and your family.
Yes, please. Thanks. This is Vinod Kumar. I met you in a Kim seminar when you was with him in Toronto.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, yes, I remember. Yes.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Do you have a question, Vinod?
No, I'm okay, Kim. I'm okay. Thanks.
Okay. Anybody else who has a question?
I have a quick question. It's about fungus.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, I have an isolated case on the right groin, and it's like a quarter size, but it has like a worm inside the outer rim. Is that ringworm?
No. Do you know where to see ringworm in your in repertory? Can I tell you where you look?
I'm looking right now at the synthesis under skin, herpetic.
Herpetic
circinate.
Yeah.
The area is herpetic circinate. That's one place where you can look. Or you can directly look under skin eruptions, ringworm.
Yeah, I see it right here.
Yeah, you can directly look under that, you know. And I'll tell you a very nice remedy for a small remedy for ringworm. It is made from a spider kingdom. You know that? That is Tela Eridia. Read this remedy from Clark. This is a very useful remedy for ringworm in my practice. A very small remedy, Tela. It is the web of the spider which is potentized.
Right. He doesn't have any itching. So would sepia be more of one for the non-itching?
If it is a non-itching, then I would rather think of remedies like basilinum, which has absolutely no itching, because chrysorbinum and torula and Tela, they all have a lot of itching. So
how do you spell that last one you said?
Yeah, will you spell that, please?
T-E-L-A, Tela Eridia, A-R-A-N-E-A-E. And if you see that the ringworms are intersecting each other, you know, like an Olympic rings, you know, then
yes,
of course tellurium is a drug
one.
Of choice. Yeah, if it is one, then it's okay. But if it's intersecting like an Olympic rings, then tellurium is a drug of choice.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Great. Other questions? Are you there? Farouk, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Good. Look, we have time for one more question. So, you know, this is one of the best podcasts in the world calling from India. Here's your golden opportunity to ask a question. Go ahead. You have time for just one more question.
Kim, I have a question.
Go ahead.
This is Donna. I always had this suspicion that skin diseases were somehow related to liver problems of some sort. Is there any accuracy to that?
Baroque? Did you hear the question? Farouk? Are you there, Farouk? Is everybody else still there?
Yes.
Farouk, did we lose you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Awesome.
Unfortunately, we lost Farouk. So I don't want to answer for him, but in my experience, sometimes skin problems are the result of liver issues, but not always. It can be the result of many different issues. So, you know, it's a multifactorial type of problem and can be the result of many different etiological factors.
Okay. So, while I have you, can you just say the names of those remedies again that he gave us for the ringworm and for the skin problems?
The last one was Tela, T-E-L-A.
T-E-L-A.
Yeah. Which is spider web.
Right. Okay, and then the other two before that.
He did one called Christ.
I lost
Christ
line got disconnected.
Brooke, are you back?
Yes, I'm back.
Okay, all right, good. I don't know what happened. We lost you.
Yeah. Tell me.
So it was, I'm just telling him the names. Chrysophanic acid, C-H-R-Y-S-O-P-H-A-N-I-C.
Okay.
And what was the other one?
What was the other one?
Tellurinia.
I told them tellurinia.
No, it was Torul, T-O-R-U-L.
T-O-R.
Torula.
T-O-R-U-L-A.
Yeah.
O R U L A. And then the last part is Cervicia, which is C E R E V as in Victor I S I A E. Torula Cervicia.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Okay, so we're out of time. Farouk, I want to thank you very much again for joining
thank
us
you.
And sharing all of your clinical experience and wisdom. It's always a pleasure to have you join us. Can everybody give Farouk a big North American, thank you for joining us on a Saturday morning.
Thank you very much.
And we look forward to all seeing all of you at the NCH conference in April. Wish you all a very good rest of the weekend. Bye. Thanks, Farouk.
Thank you.